What's your rec?
We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection. And the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby or visit preborn.com.
Reputation? Kind? Generous? Shy? Rick Robertson says it would be wonderful to have the reputation of being someone who did things that were right in God's eyes. Of course, our best example of that is Jesus. And in the article in The Stand called A Soul Refreshing Rain, Rick helps us see how Jesus' attributes can change our daily lives. Visit afa.net/the stand and read A Soul Refreshing Rain today. afa.net/the stand.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Monday, January 27th, and it's already been a week, and only a week, since Donald Trump was inaugurated as the 47th president. And it feels like it has been about 100 news cycles with all of the executive orders, the appointments, the actions, the trips. I mean, he has gotten more done in the last week than Joe Biden did in 4 years of his presidency. And everybody keeps saying that, but it's actually true. It is so refreshing to have a real president back. And I posted on my X page yesterday that America has soundly rejected the gentle parenting style of presidency. We are ready for consequences to be imposed for those who are lawless and those who don't respect America. And yesterday was such a brilliant example of this with the situation that happened in Colombia. So, of course, the Trump administration is actually starting deportations. And there's been a lot of critics saying, okay, fine, you know, you've deported 500, you promised millions. I'm like, okay, guys, it's been a week. I mean, give him a little bit of time here and also a lot of credit for even starting this, because 500 is way better than allowing another 200,000 in, which is what would have happened and continued to happen under the Biden administration. So at least we're winding this back and we're reversing the problem of an open and porous border. But yesterday, And I was, you know, I was just enjoying my Sunday afternoon, and I'm kind of watching the headlines come in and preparing for today's show. And there was a news story that dropped that said Colombia and Colombia's president is saying that they won't accept the flights of immigrants, and they've denied at least two of the aircraft. And then another story, you know, very quickly after that said that Trump then immediately said, all right, we're going to impose 25% tariffs. If you don't change this within the week, that'll be 50%. We're going to impose sanctions on Colombia and on the president's family, himself, and a whole host of other things. And he posts this on Truth Social. And meanwhile, he's golfing, by the way, at the Doral here in Florida. And he's on like hole three when this news breaks that he's pushing out these sanctions against Colombia. By hole eight, he hadn't even reached the back nine. And I know Tim Wildman, if he's listening this morning, is going to appreciate this. He hadn't even reached the back nine. And Colombia immediately caved and said, okay, fine. And the president of Colombia actually offered his own personal plane to go and pick up the illegal immigrants. And I thought, that is America back using its force and our position on the world stage, because we can appropriately tell these other countries, no, you can't deny what we are trying to do in terms of securing our border and actually being America. So it was a brilliant move. And I was just, I mean, it didn't even take that long. I literally had hardly, you know, made another cup of coffee yet before Colombia acquiesced. And that's just one great example of what President Trump is accomplishing. And meanwhile, we're gonna talk about this in the next segment with Father Frank Pavone on everything that the Trump administration is doing for life, the executive orders directing HHS, the lack of weaponizing the FACE Act now, the pardons for pro-lifers, the messages that were given by video from President Trump to the March for Life on Friday, and from J.D. Vance personally. And this is really amazing because there were a lot of us, myself included, for those of you who've listened to the show, this is the third year we've been on. You've seen this kind of progression from a lot of pro-lifers that we loved the first Trump administration and how staunchly he stood for life, and then were very concerned during the general election and even the primary. But especially the general election, with a lot of the rhetoric that really pulled back on some of these pro-life priorities. And that was a costly maneuver, and it could have, thankfully it didn't, but it could have cost Trump the election, with a lot of evangelical Christians who are saying, well, wait a minute, can we really vote for this when the promises are not as upfront and as robust as his first administration? And thankfully, you know, those like myself, I mean, we're looking at this saying, okay, but regardless of what he actually does in his second administration, it will be 100% better than the communist Marxism, that socialism that Kamala Harris promises. And so we're going to support Donald Trump, and hopefully once he gets into office, we can, plead with his administration, we can lobby, all of those things. I personally was expecting to have to do a lot more work through not only AFA Action, but, you know, partnering with a lot of our other coalitions and, getting individuals into the administration to do some of these things like pardon the pro-lifers, stop weaponizing the government in terms of pro-lifers, and actually getting the Trump administration to stand up as robustly for life. I am so grateful that we didn't have to do that work, that on day one, the first week, we have seen not just the campaign promises on the border, on the economy, those things that are absolutely priorities that I happily supported and robustly supported, but that he is standing up as strongly for life as he did in his first administration. That's a surprise. And I think that this warrants the first weekend, a step back to say, okay, this is where Christians need to be now in supporting this administration. And I want to take just myself as an example of kind of the moments in time and sort of the evolution, if you will, of the support for Trump, then my support for Governor DeSantis in the primary, and then ultimately supporting Trump in the general, and now being incredibly supportive of him. Now, you don't have to like Trump, you don't have to agree with him on everything to support his administration. If you are a Christian, we should be praying for our leaders, and we should be praying for their success, regardless of their party, regardless if we supported them in either the primary or the general. That's what we're called biblically to do. Now, if a Democrat had been elected, Kamala Harris would never have done this, by the way, but if a Democrat had been elected and suddenly they became pro-life, or they were, you know, sending all of these flights back to Colombia and really securing our border and doing all of these things, I would be championing that, right? Because whenever any government leader in America does the right thing, and right does not depend on political right versus left, we're talking about biblically correct, we're talking about actually for the good of our nation, we're talking about conservatism, which is built from a biblical worldview premise and understanding that our rights come from God, our creator, and it's the sole purpose of government to preserve and protect them, preserve our national sovereignty so that we as Americans can exercise our freedoms and liberties. Whenever any politician or any government office does the right thing, the biblically correct thing, we champion in that. And that's where we need to be for Trump's administration, because I'm seeing so much still of people on social media, or, you know, even on some of the news programs I watch, that there's still kind of this back and forth of like, well, you know, didn't you say during the primary this, or didn't you say during the general that, and, you know, you were all in for Trump in, you know, 2016, but then you became a never Trumper and now you're that. It doesn't matter, right? Because there are different stages to history. And if you look back and you remember 5 minutes ago when we were all very concerned about whether or not Trump would stand up for life, we were right to call that out. We were right to call out the RNC for taking a step back in terms of the language that they had in their platform that didn't actually address the sanctity of human life as well as it did previously, that it didn't have the same recognition of biblical traditional marriage. Those are issues, and we need to call attention to those issues, and then if and when they're corrected, say, great, we support that. That's how politics and policy work. And I have really never seen, and I think this is just sort of the Trump effect, I've really never seen a situation where so many different people in the country are so against each other and each other's opinions based on whether they think your fidelity and loyalty is to the person. Because this is not about loyalty to Trump himself or not. This is all about fidelity to, as Americans, the U.S. Constitution, the principles of conserving our nation's history that was founded on a biblical worldview, and ultimately our standard, which I consistently remind you and remind myself, I remind us that our standard is in the Bible. It is a fixed, objective truth that is built solidly in biblical morality. And that binds government to its obligations, but it also binds our actions and our opinions and our support if we want to be consistent to biblical worldview. As a Christian, I want to be consistent with Christ, and whether or not a politician is consistent with Christ, that's their problem. My standard is not going to waver depending on what a politician does, and I have to then support something and then not support something depending on the whim of a politician on any given day. I mean, that is what the Bible calls being tossed to and fro with every wind of doctrine, right? You can apply that to this, to a political level as well. And you can apply that and ensure that you are remaining steadfast to truth. And so I am just over all of the people who are saying, well, you know, you supported Trump, then you supported DeSantis. I don't regret supporting DeSantis at all, because he would have been doing the exact same things that Trump is doing, possibly better, who knows, right? But ultimately, it doesn't matter, because Trump is doing it, so I'm happy. I am happy as a Christian, I'm happy as an American, I'm happy as a citizen, and I will applaud that, and it didn't matter. And DeSantis and Rubio, who ran against him in 2016, who's now a great Secretary of State, who's, you know, the one flag rule and is rolling back, you know, all of the DEI with Secretary Hegseth that just got appointed as SecDef. I mean, I love all of this, right? So it doesn't matter what happened yesterday to get us to this point. What matters is that we move forward consistently as Christians standing up for truth. Now, there are going to be things down the road that Christians should disagree with Trump, because it's not going to be a perfect administration, right? And that's okay. And when we call out those things and we say, this wasn't a good decision, or this was good, but it didn't go far enough, that is not impugning the person. That is talking about the policy. And if you want to have a good conversation about the merit of a discussion and the meat of the discussion, you will talk about the policy and not the person. We talk about the person when they're running for office, because character matters, their decision-making, their track record, all of these things. But now that he is in office, there are so many other people in the administration that we need to talk about the policies and always call out consistently the standard. And if our standard is truth, then we will have no problem standing up for the truth. And so I'm not going to engage anymore in any of these sort of petty, you know, political nonsense that's sort of in-house of everybody saying, well, you know, I'm with Apollos or I'm with Paul.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. All right. Well, we are probably having some power surges or something going on with my Comrex here. So I am joining now via our internet. So if you can't really hear me that well, I apologize, but we're going to continue at least the live show. And again, you know, live radio, we just roll with it and all good. But, you know, I was saying before we unfortunately had to take the break that we just all need to collectively as Christians set our standard, which is always the truth of Christ, and compare and contrast whatever the Trump administration or anyone else in government office does. And if they are consistent with truth, we applaud that. We pray for their success. If they're not, we call it out and we hold them accountable. And it's as simple as that. It's not about being pro-Trump, anti-Trump, never Trump, blah, 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 blah. None of that matters. And I have never seen a coalition or a group of people or whatever you want to call it be so concerned about a primary that was over a year ago. I mean, it just does not matter anymore. And so as we are a week into this, let's all collectively come together and say this has been a phenomenally successful week. I'm super excited. I have a lot of hope with this. If you missed On Demand, my AFR exclusive podcast with Daniel Horowitz that dropped last Friday, go back and listen to that because he's a guest who I just sincerely respect and love from The Blaze. And we did a deep dive into some of the actions so far from the Trump administration and what constitutes enduring generational successes. And that's what we need to be pushing for and lobbying for with the Trump administration. And hopefully we will see that in even the next week, the next month, and especially because we have 4 years to win and succeed and to push America even further so that it's not that we're taking one step forward, three steps back. We have to consistently create that more perfect union. And perfect in that context is the same type of thing as working out our own salvation, being constantly perfecting our own actions as individuals in light of Christ. We need to be doing the same thing as a Christian nation and saying that we are going to perfect our nation based and rooted in the Judeo-Christian worldview. So let's welcome in my good friend, Frank Pavone, who is the founder of Priests for Life. He was there at the March for Life last Friday. And Frank, I'm so excited to have you on this morning because I cannot even tell you how excited I am that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and the Trump administration is as pro-life as we hoped and prayed they would be with all of these, the pardons of the pro-lifers, the guidance to HHS, the guidance to the DOJ, and what I hope is going to be forthcoming legislation from Congress. This is a really great thing. So good morning and a happy second week of the Trump administration.
Happy second week. It is awesome. As you said, I was in Washington, D.C. I came in for the inauguration. I participated in a number of inaugural events and then stayed in the city for the March for Life. And I got to tell you, I wish I could convey the spirit that was on the streets of Washington, D.C. It was like a big block party all week long. The first part of the week, because of the inauguration, the second part of the week, the streets filled with pro-life people from coast to coast. And as you know, President Trump sent a video to the March for Life that was played, and Vice President Vance was there in person. Right after those events, by the way, on the night of the March for Life, once all the events were finished, I flew to San Francisco because on the next day, there is the second largest annual pro-life gathering, the Walk for Life West Coast. It took place in San Francisco, as it usually does. And it was amazing to hear the pro-life people and the leaders that were there saying to me, you know, the ones that are residents of California were saying, I never thought that in this city we would hear so many cheers for a Republican administration. So it was really wonderful because people are aware of these actions that you briefly mentioned, and there were more. Jenna, there were more than one a day so far in terms of pro-life actions, and the pro-lifers are aware of this. It's like you and I discussed during the election season. Remember, one of the things we were saying was that as the media were trying to press Trump and Vance about Will you sign a national ban on abortion? Will you not? Will you do this? And I was saying during that time, we were both saying, wait a minute, why aren't they asking about things like the Mexico City policy and like rejoining the Geneva Consensus and like taking the monies away from the abortion industry that the president could do on day one? And we were saying he's going to do those things. Honest journalists would know enough to ask those kinds of questions, because then they would have said yes, and pro-life people would be encouraged in the same way before the election as they are encouraged now that they've seen those actions being taken.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it is so encouraging that these actions are being taken, and we do need to follow this up with legislation. And so now that we're seeing all of these great actions from the Trump administration, do you have hope that Congress will follow that up potentially with some legislation? Because I really think, honestly, if Congress were to codify abortion restrictions and life protections pursuant to the 14th Amendment and other provisions in the Constitution, and I think that there's going to be, that'd be very difficult to get through the Senate. I'm not sure it could actually pass, but if that were to be attempted, and if it passed in the House and the Senate, I think Trump would sign it.
I do too. And the reason we both think this way, it seems to me, is that we understand that if it were to get through Congress, that means there's a political appetite for it in America, or at least that it's politically safe enough that because how would the members of the Senate, you know, vote for such a measure? They're always taking the temperature of how is this going to help or hurt me back home. And so these things rise and fall together. You know, they any kind of expression of ambivalence on the part of the administration that we or the campaign that we saw over this last year is because, you know, they're looking at the political winds and waves. But if we can get to the point of, obviously, through the ongoing educational efforts of the movement, that we can pass such things. Yeah, I agree that he would sign them. And, you know, this is, let's put this in the context of something that President Trump has been saying: common sense governance. You know, the pro-life actions are clear. There's a whole litany of them. A lot of them have to do with funding and so forth, enforcing the Hyde Amendment. We can go into some of them more specifically if you like. But the one about transgender has more impact on the pro-life movement than people might realize at first, because now he said, look, policy of the United States regarding gender is going to be a common sense policy. And the way he crafted the order, saying that we recognize only two genders, male and female, was restoring biological truth to the federal government. Now, let's think about that phrase for a moment. Restoring biological truth to the federal government. Well, biological truth does not only tell us a man is a man and a woman is a woman. It also tells us a baby is a baby. So doesn't biological truth in federal government mean that we have to abandon this pretense, this mirage that somehow whether that's a baby in the womb deserving of protection depends on your choice? That's as absurd as saying your gender depends on your choice. We've turned a corner. Common sense governance is a bedrock foundation for great progress in the fight against abortion.
You know, that's a great point. Frank Pavone, my guest this morning, founder of Priests for Life, and he was at the March for Life this past week in Washington, D.C., that if we start with the basics, then we can build up from there. And that's why basic truth, like truth in biology, will matter to the outcome of some of these other decisions. And this is why a lot of Christians, myself included, for example, say that we believe in a literal reading of the Genesis creation account in Scripture. Because if you start with the truth, then how God told us in the Bible, then that gets you to the correct interpretation of later passages. And so you have to take the whole counsel of God and you have to interpret it correctly. But this is why even in government and in policy, when you recognize some of these basic truths, it then impacts policy that you weren't even potentially anticipating. And I think that's a great reminder. So where does the pro-life movement go from here? I mean, I know we're focused on a lot of the states
We're focused on ensuring that state policy is good. We get some protections in state constitutions, some of those things in legislation, and potentially now the federal level. But where do you think now with this corner being turned, the pro-life movement is going?
Well, that's a question we're going to address in a couple of weeks, and I would ask our listeners to pray for the pro-life leaders. There are many, many national groups, and I have the privilege of convening them every few months for strategy meetings. Week after next, we're going to have the pro-life leaders gathered right here in Florida at our Priest for Life headquarters, and we're going to gather for 3 solid days, and we are going to address the very question you just asked, because there are many, many tactics, many, many projects, many initiatives that many pro-life groups undertake. And I'm sure that many of our listeners who support pro-life efforts often wonder, you know, do these leaders get together, or can we combine forces, or can we work together? And I want to assure them we are doing everything possible to make that happen. It requires everyone's goodwill, but we are coming together. And I'm confident that one of the things, said Jenna, that we are going to focus on is forced abortion, coerced abortion, because this is a way where you can combine the strength that we have in this new administration, the wind is at our backs in terms of pro-life, and you can actually combine it with the losses that we've had in terms of these ballot measures that have passed in certain states, putting a so-called right to reproductive freedom, right to abortion, in the state constitutions. What do I mean? What I mean is that if a person has a constitutional right to reproductive freedom, that doesn't just mean the right to end one's pregnancy. That also means the right to continue one's pregnancy. And yet, research reveals most abortions involve some element of coercion. So we can end most abortions if we pass measures requiring those abortion facilities to screen for coercion, to make sure that this is truly her choice and not the choice of the father of the baby, or the choice of her father, or the or her mother, or the choice of someone else, or just because of circumstances that are forcing her to do something that she really doesn't want to do. And so I think we can make these so-called right to reproductive freedom boomerang on itself. We're going to talk as leaders about this very question. We're going to have the researchers with us in the room. We're going to have legal experts and analysts, and we're going to take direct aim. I think that's one of the key things that is a path to making good progress in the coming months and in the coming year.
And that's another great reminder, Father Frank Pavonia, to focus on the protections for life and also even beyond that. And I know that, you know, so many of the left falsely accuse conservatives of only being pro-birth, and that could not be further from the truth. But we need to consistently and continue to stand up for life, the whole life, for the mother, for the family, and consistently just stand up for the truth and biblical values. So I'm looking forward to joining you in that fight and that stand over the next coming days and years. And it's going to be it's going to be a great thing. I mean, I'm more encouraged standing here today than, of course, I would have been had the alternative happened in 2024. So it's a great thing. Let's continue to pray for the Trump administration to consistently stand up for life, especially as we will be seeing the RFK Jr. confirmation hearing this coming Wednesday. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
This Sanctity of Life Month, we honor the over 66 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe versus Wade. Sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at even greater risk now. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines, and that's Preborn. Preborn's network of clinics have rescued over 300,000 babies from abortion and have prayed with over 80,000 women to come to Christ.
When I heard her heartbeat, I decided to keep her. And now my daughter's about to be 3. I don't know where my life would be without her.
An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. This is Jenna Ellis asking you to join Preborn in protecting life. One ultrasound session costs $28, and $140 will sponsor 5 ultrasounds. Any gift will help, $100, $200, even $1,000. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, the state of Florida is stepping up to implement President Trump's agenda on the state level, with a special session being called by Governor DeSantis to address things like border security and do actually more legislation instead of just waiting until March when the regular session begins. And Senator Jay Collins from Florida has filed a Senate Bill 18A ballot petition reform. You can go to flsenate.gov and read the text of this petition process. And Senator Collins joins me now. And good morning, Senator. I'm really excited about this, especially in light of what had happened in the last election with amendments 3 and 4 and a lot of the challenges just to the process of those amendments even getting on the ballot that really shouldn't have been on the ballot. And so explain for us this morning what this legislation would do and how that's in the best interest of Floridians to be protected from some of these special interest groups that are coming in trying to take advantage of voters.
Well, thank you for that, Jenna, and good morning to you. I'm grateful to be on the show today. And, you know, you hit on something really critical. There were was a study in 23 from OECS that showed 14 initiative petition circulators had been arrested for committing mass petition fraud. Of that, it was a significant number, 5,664 forms submitted, with 2,854, over 50%, were accepted. Unfortunately, right now, the only validation we have is a rudimentary signature viewing by the people who are out there gathering the petitions. What this does is apply the same level of security to these petitions as we do for the rest of our election process. We know we have a first. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that seems so straightforward. I mean, that seems like this should have been part of the petition process all along.
Yep. No, I completely agree. If you go look at our Constitution, the section that talks about petition forms is 131 words long. When it was written, we didn't have the systems, the internet. We didn't have the ability to communicate laterally across the state and across the country. We have to modify this. We have to update it for modern times because they're getting more aggressive. We know that. This is a very straightforward bill. We know that specifically after the OECS report came out, we did an audit of this, and it showed even more rampant issues. So we know there's a problem. People saw with their eyes, and now we have the mathematical proof as we continue to go through this. So what does this do? Under this proposal, people submitting a signed petition form will be required to prove that they are who they say they are in the same way as submitting ballots. Two ways. One, showing up at the supervisor of elections office to provide documentation, or two, requesting a petition form or return envelope from the supervisor of elections, exactly the way we do with VBM. You know, that protects the vote by mail, but what it does do is the circulators are no longer turning those in. There's a personal responsibility with that. Now, this bill does a couple other things. First, it conforms a statute governing candidate petitions to the same identity. That's to make sure that we are in line with our own Constitution. We're not violating anything. We're being equal and fair across the board. Second, it makes it illegal to offer or accept anything of value in exchange for signing or not signing a petition form. Shouldn't have to say that. Pay to play leads to rampant fraud. Third, the bill amends campaign finance laws to limit foreign influence in the petition process. Again, we don't want foreign interests being involved in our petition process. Four, it allows the Secretary of State to decertify an initiative petition if the Supreme Court sees the initiative no compliant, or if the Secretary of State determines it did not obtain the requisite number of signatures. Five, the is that the bill, in addition to the disclosure of material legal effects composed by Attorney General, this disclosure, this financial disclosure, will appear between the ballot summary and the financial impact statement and will identify each provision of Florida law that may be repealed by the amendment. Six, it cleans up the law governing financial impact statements. Seven, the bill requires amendments proposed by the initiative to define all terms of art. We know there was a specific vagueness in how things were written. It was misinterpreted by many people. And because of that, we've got to tie that up. You have to have definitions to be straightforward and honest. And last, this bill expands the scope of the Supreme Court's advisory opinion proceedings. It allows them to cover compliance with the new term of art requirement, as well as the amendment's compliance with Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution. So this is a pretty comprehensive bill.
That's incredible. And are you already getting any sort of pushback from either some of your fellow GOP members or from the Democrats? I mean, they love to throw around this term disenfranchisement as if any sort of accountability or auditing or election integrity, like what this bill proposes, is somehow disenfranchising people because, I mean, you know, hey, election integrity is somehow something that, you know, if we don't have that and makes it easier for fraud to happen, then somehow that's not disenfranchising. I mean, it's ridiculous. But are you seeing any sort of pushback?
Yeah. So in terms of the left, absolutely. You're hearing all the same things, the ACLU, the discussion on civil liberties. That, simply put, isn't. We have to have faith in our process. We owe our constituents an honest, fair process. If the people choose something and it's legal and appropriate, well, then the people have spoken. Unfortunately, we had people spending hundreds of millions of dollars. It was rife with fraud, and we know that. So this is legitimate. I am incredibly grateful to have the opportunity to work on this. And then in terms of our Republican colleagues, I don't think it's the discussion of what this bill does. It's a timing discussion is where people are offline. I have complete faith in our leadership, in their constitutional focus. I have complete faith that they're going to, you know, want to do something like this. I believe, personally, that this is critical. You know, I was a Green Beret for 23 years. Tomorrow is not guaranteed. I've been shot and blown up for our country. And I believe, therefore, we have to maximize the time. We have to lean forward and be aggressive in getting this done because petitions are already being done. The more time we waste, the more petitions will be potentially fraudulently collected. So we've got to do the right thing to protect our elections and, in this case, our petition process.
Absolutely. And I'm speaking with Senator Jay Collins out of Florida, and the bill that he's referencing is Senate Bill or SB 18A. You can go and read the text for yourself at flsenate.gov. And would two of the other things that voters, myself included as a Floridian now in 2024, were concerned about was the 60% threshold and also the lack of ability of the legislature to come back and actually define some of those terms of art, for example, or narrow the scope or some of those things after a constitutional amendment provision with some kind of implementing legislation. Does this bill address either of those two issues?
So in terms of the 60%, we are not going after that. I believe that right now is a good measure if we can solve the process coming up to it. I do believe there's more discussion on that percentage in modifying that, but let's make sure we chew up the process left of that first, and then we'll have, you know, functional data to drive that. And in terms of the legislature coming in and redefining terms of art after the fact, we're going ahead, and I believe it was Provision 7. The bill requires amendments proposed by initiatives to define all terms of art beyond debate when it comes to something as important as amending our Constitution. They got to know what they're voting on. It was completely misleading. We've put that specific nuanced piece in here. We know that in 3 and 4, they chose terms that worked out in polling data that misled people and took them down a path that an average citizen would not step into. So we're addressing one, not necessarily the other yet, though I am open to it in future iterations of language like this.
Okay, so and that all makes sense, and I agree with you that the terms of art and the bill's language needs to be abundantly clear. And it was absolutely preposterous in Amendment 4, for example, and I had conversations, you know, just with friends of mine that everybody had kind of a little bit different interpretation or understanding, or yes, it would do this, or no, it wouldn't do that. And then, of course, the governor had to come out and, you know, talk about a lot of those things. And thankfully, he got the message out. But with so many, I mean, it was definitely over 50% that ended up voting for Amendment 4. And yet it still failed because of that 60% threshold. So do you anticipate that that threshold will be addressed in this current legislative session? Or is that something that, you know, I mean, I said you've said you're waiting on it in terms of this proposed bill, but is that something being discussed to address this legislative cycle?
Yeah, so that's always a discussion. It is. That's been a number that we wanted to discuss. Is it 60? Is it 65? Is it 70? Where is that threshold? You know, if you look at what we did after OECS and auditing across the state, 13,059 validated petition forms were analyzed. Over 20% should not have been validated due to statutory deficiencies. What that's telling us is they didn't, in all likelihood, have enough signatures in certain cases as this audit continues to grow and expand as we dig more into this to even be on the ballot. There was that much fraud potentially with these circulators. So I think we have to take care of that first problem, and then we'll address the second. But yeah, absolutely. We're talking about it. We know it's potentially an issue, but I think you have to validate the first end of this first and then come into the secondary aspect of it just to be very linear in approach.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Senator Jay Collins about this citizens petition process. And this kind of raises the question because there is such an opportunity for fraud or misunderstanding of terms of art, or, you know, all of these things that your bill addresses. This raises the question of citizens petitions in general, because a lot of people will say, you know, this is the right of citizens, you know, to put things on our ballot that maybe the legislature won't. But, you know, I see it kind of an in run around our elected representatives. And if we have this type of process, it should be just as straightforward and frankly difficult as it is to have a citizens initiative go through, especially for a constitutional amendment, as it would getting legislation passed in the state legislature, because we don't want to change the law or especially amend the Constitution easily. So, you know, do you find that the process as a whole is something that is overused? I mean, obviously, it has been abused in the ways that you've suggested and what's been shown in these reports. But is the system as a whole being overused?
The system as a whole for the amendment process, I think you're seeing a shift where people just aren't able to get things done in legislation, right? They're not moving through and they're not getting some of this these bills and this language that would have functional changes. And they found a back door into doing that and amending our Constitution. And Jenna, you hit it on the head. This is our Constitution for the state of Florida. There is an incredibly high bar to amend that. That's not something we should do lightly. That's not something we should do without clarity. That's not something we should do with any type of fraud in the process. We owe it to people to make sure that is a vested, tested, and trusted approach to things. We can't have anything less than our best on this. So unfortunately, I think you're going to see more and more of this, because with 3 and 4, you saw that people could spend huge amounts of money, influence this, and with the way the petitioned circulators were sharing information, it was misleading. So I do unfortunately believe you'll see more, and we have to act on this now. Time is not on our side.
Absolutely. And I think the left is using citizens petitions because they can easily mislead voters and because it's an in run around the supermajority Republicans. And so the left is trying to just use whatever process they can to circumvent the priorities of Republicans and conservatives. And so we need these types of protections to protect our vote and protect citizens, so that we don't have all of this type of fraud or misleading types of proposals on ballot initiatives. So I'm really grateful that you're doing this. So in just the last 2 minutes I have with you, Senator Jay Collins, how can people who are listening in the state of Florida help with getting this this bill through, and how can we help you achieve that?
Well, first off, you got to use your voice. Talk to your representatives, talk to your family, talk to your friends. Make sure they're well educated on these points, on what's going on and why this is so important. I can't do this by myself. The legislators across the board can't do this. We need the citizens to understand how critically important this is to our Constitution and our way of life. Get online. Get on Twitter. Get on Facebook. Get on Instagram. Those things right now are huge ways to share whatever's going on. Give me a follow, Jay Collins FL, on all three of those, and help us get this information out. But ultimately, reach out to your legislators. Let them know your thoughts. Reach out to your local elected officials. Let them know your thoughts. The more we use our voice, the stronger we're going to be across the board.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very thankful for your voice on behalf of Florida, and we are definitely supporting this legislation. It's great to ensure that there's integrity in the Citizens Initiative process. So Jay Collins, thanks so much for joining, and you can follow him on X at Jay Collins FL. And we are already out of time this morning for Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.